Now reading from the Sri Upanishad. The blue book is under the pink tab. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnambudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Ishavasyam idam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita magridha kasiswiddhanam kurvaniveha karmani jijivishekshatam samaha evam tvai nanyate tosti nakarma lipite nare asurya namate loka antena tamasavritaha Tamste pratyavigachchanti yeke chatmahano janaha ane jarikam manaso javiho naina deva apnuvam purvanarshat tadavato jnana teti tishtat tashmina pomatarishva dadati tadejati tannaijati tadure tadvantike tadantarasya sarvasya Taru sarvasyasya bhayataha Yastu sarvani bhutani Atmani vanu pashyati Sarva bhuteshu chatmanam Tato na vijagupsate Yasmin sarvani bhutani Atmai vad bhudvijanataha Tatra ko mahakashoka Ekat vammanu pashyataha Saparya jakshukram akayam avranam asnaviram shudham apapavidham kavirmani shi priyabhu swayampur yatat yatyator tan yaradasya svatibhya samabhyaha andam tama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato puya ivate tamo yau vidyayam rataha Anyadeva hurvidyaya, andyadahura vidyaya, iti shushumadhiranam, yenastad vichichakshade, vidyam chayas, tadvedo bayam saha, avidyayam ratum tirdva, vidyayam ratum ashnute, andantama pravishanti, ye sambutim upasate, Tato puya ivate tamo yau sambutyam rataha anyadeva hur sambhavad anyadahura sambhavad iti shushrumadhiranam inastad vichichakshide sambutim cha vinasham cha yastad vedo bayam saha vinashena mrityum tirtva sambutyam mrityum ashnute Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham tattvam pushana pavrenu satyadharmaya drishtaye pushanikarshe yama surya prajapatya vyuharashmin samuha tejo yate rupam kalyanatamam tate prashami yosavasau purushasomasmi vayur anilam amratam Atedam bashmantam shariram Om kratosmara kritam smara Kratosmara kritam smara Agne naya supatarai asman Vishvani deva vayunani vidvan Yuyodhyas maschuharanameno Buishtam te nama uktim vidhema Shri Upanishad Sampurnam Hari Om Om Tat Sat Together, the translations, very much together. The personality of God, it is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years. He continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of God, it is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place he controls those who supply the air and rain, he surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord, true knower of things, what then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Only one who can learn the process of nations and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and then enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so to the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and then another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men, and animals. When one knows these, it surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you, and since you know all I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins, so that there will be no hindrance to my progress. Tonight we're looking at mantra number 13, Hare Krishna. This will be, you'll find in your Shirsha Upanishad book, which is a miracle in and of itself that we have this book. It's been passed down for many, many millions of years, and we have it right here, held in our hand. The Shirsha Upanishad. Out of the 108 Upanishads, this is a very important Upanishad. It's a message coming from the spiritual world. Krishna's giving out mercy at every minute. It's only a matter of our receptivity, how much we'd like to take in. Krishna is Karuna Sindhu, or the ocean of mercy. Atapite deva padambuja dvaya prashada leshana grihita evati janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya eko picharamba chinban. Lord Brahma realized it. He said that if one can get just a trace of mercy from the lotus feet of the Lord, then he can understand everything about the greatness of the Supreme Personality of God. Because we're working in a descending process. And if Krishna wants to reveal himself to us, then he will do so. And if he doesn't, there's nothing that we can do by our own power to see him. So the Upanishads are part of Krishna's mercy. They're coming down from him, from his breathing, just to give us special benediction. And those who receive it with an open mind and heart take the direct mercy of the Lord into their ears, into their hearts, into their minds, and it's a curative for the disease of material existence, which is called bhavarog, the suffering of birth, death, old age, and disease. And it is the method for reconnecting with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mantra 13, page number 91. I'll say, please repeat. Anyat. Anyareva ho sambhavan. Anyarahura sambhavan. Iti shushu madhiranam. Yenas tad vichachakshare. Anyat. Different. Eva. Certainly. Ahu. It is said. Sambhavat. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, the cause of all causes. Anyat, different. Ahu, it is said. Asambhavat, by worshipping what is not supreme. Iti, thus. Shushruma, I heard it. Dhiranam, from the undisturbed authorities. Ye, who? Naha, unto us. Tut, about that subject matter. Vichachakshire, perfectly explained. Translation, it is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and then another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. Would you like to repeat? Yeah? It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes. And then another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. Purport, the system of hearing from undisturbed authorities is approved in this mantra. Unless one hears from a bona fide acharya, who is never disturbed by the changes of the material world, one cannot have the real key to transcendental knowledge. The bona fide spiritual master who has also heard the Shruti mantras, or Vedic knowledge from his undisturbed acharya, never presents anything that is not mentioned in the Vedic literature. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.25, it is clearly said that those who worship the Pitris, or forefathers, attain the planets of the forefathers, that the gross materialists, who make plans to remain here, stay in the material world, and the devotees of the Lord who worship none but Lord Krishna, the supreme cause of all causes, reach him in his spiritual sky. Here also, in Sri Upanishad, it is verified that one achieves different results by different modes of worship. If we worship the Supreme Lord, we will certainly reach him in his eternal abode, and if we worship demigods like the sun god or moon god, we can reach their respective planets without a doubt. And if we wish to remain on this wretched planet with our planning commissions and our stopgap political adjustments, we can certainly also do that. So what was said in the first paragraph so far? What are the main points?
Those who worship Pitrus, they go to the planets of the Pitrus, planets of the forefathers. And those who worship Krishna, they go to the planet of the spiritual world. This is to emphasize that one result is achieved from worshipping the supreme causes of all causes, and another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme.
And what is the verse that substantiates that Prabhupada's referring to, who he's summarizing?
Yanti in the
yes.
Pitruni yanti deva vrata devan pitruni yanti pritru vrataha bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti mat yajina pimam.
So it basically means you can go where you like. It's up to you. Wherever you focus, that's where you'll go. Okay, what are their main points? Use the mic.
It emphasizes the importance of hearing from authorities. And it also says, particularly the spiritual master, and also it was mentioned that the spiritual master always backs up whatever he says with scriptures.
What is the qualification of a spiritual master, according to the paragraph?
Undisturbed, yeah. The bona fide spiritual master who has also heard the Smriti mantras of Vedic knowledge from his undisturbed acharas never presents anything that is not mentioned in the Vedic literature.
Okay. The spiritual master, you have to have four hands? Does it say the spiritual master has to have four hands?
No, it does not.
Doesn't, but it does say what? He has to have heard, right?
Heard, yeah.
And present what he's heard. Okay, so the spiritual master doesn't have to have four hands. But the spiritual master has to have heard from the correct source and then repeat what he's heard correctly. And you mentioned something? Undisturbed? Okay, give him the mic.
Spiritual master also has not be undisturbed by the changes of the material world.
Give us some explication of that. What does it mean to be undisturbed? Where does it say it in the Bhagavad Gita? What is the meaning of that?
Like undisturbed with three modes of material nature.
Okay. Say more.
And also, irrespective of the heat and cold, all the senses, and distress, and well-being or whatever bad things happen, always will remain same, like sthita prajna.
Okay. Undisturbed by the changes of the material world, like heat and cold, you said, like matra sparsha stukonteya shitoshna sukadukada agama pahino nityas tamstatik shashvabharata. Person who's tolerant, even though there's heat and cold, happiness and distress, he tolerates all those things knowing that they're just passing through. Let's talk more about that. A person who's dhira, what is the how does a person become undisturbed, and what is the exact mentality of a person who's undisturbed? Does it mean they're unfeeling? What if somebody dies? Do they not give a call or care that somebody died? It says in the Bhagavad Gita, after all, that a person who's self-realized doesn't lament for the living or the dead. Does that mean they don't give a phone call if somebody's mother dies? Malini doesn't think so. You have an opinion about that? Give her the mic.
One is not disturbed by somebody's passing away. It doesn't mean that we become we should not be sympathetic. We can be sympathetic because the person is a devotee to their feelings. So not calling.
But why? They're not their body. Why should we care? It says one should not lament for the living or the dead. Why should we care? Why should we make a show?
So maybe even if we understand that, the person whose parent has died does not understand that, and we still feel compassionate for him.
Okay.
We miss the association of that person who has lived this body, so that's a mood of separation. We lament for that, but So we have the emotions.
First canto, get in first canto. Okay, you have emotions. So what does it mean to be dhira? First canto, part one.
Dhira means one who is not disturbed in his path of self-realization and prescribed duties.
Queen Kuti says, Atavishvesha Vishvatman Vishvamurte Sukeshume Snehapasha Mimam Chindi Dridham Pandushu Vishnishu. Ata, therefore, Vishva Isha, O Lord of the universe, Vishva Atman, O soul of the universe, Vishvamurte, O personality of the universal form, Swakeshu, unto my own kinsman, my snehapasham, tie of affection, imam, this, chindi, cut off, dridham, deep, pandushu, for the Pandavas, vishnishu, for the Vishnis also. Translation, O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please therefore sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. Purport, a pure devotee of the Lord is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest from the Lord. But the householders are sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord, being bound by the tie of family affection. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and therefore she prayed to the Lord to cut off the affectionate tie from her own kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. The Pandavas are her own sons, and the Vrishnis are the members of her paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both the families, but the families required the Lord's help because both were dependent devotees of the Lord. Srimati Kunti Devi wished Sri Krishna to remain with her sons, the Pandavas, but by his doing so, her paternal house would be bereft of the benefit. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. The typical example is the band of six Goswamis who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belong to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes, but for the benefit of the mass of population, they left their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing this, no one can be qualified as a Brahmin, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. Sri Ramachandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife to manifest the qualities of an ideal king. Such personalities as a Brahmin, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and being weak, she prayed to be freed from such bondage of family affection. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of his special affinity toward a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back home, back to Godhead. 42. Tvayi me nanya vishaya matir madu pate sakrit ratim udvahata dadda gangi vaugam utanvati. Tvayi. Unto you. Me. My. Ananya vishaya. Unalloyed. Matihi. Attention. Madhupate. O Lord of Madhu. Asakrit. Continuously. Ratim, attraction, udvahatat, may overflow, adda, directly, ganga, the Ganges, eva, like, ogham, flows, udanvati, down to the sea. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Purport, perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord. To cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements, like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others because this is a symptom of life. The symptoms of life, such as desire, anger, hankerings, feelings of attraction, etc., cannot be annihilated. Only the objective has to be changed. Desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service, the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord in place of desire for sense gratification. The so-called affection for family, society, country, etc., consists of different phases of sense gratification. When this desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, it is called devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, we can see that Arjuna desired not to fight with his brothers and relations just to satisfy his own personal desires. But when he heard the message of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he changed his decision and to serve the Lord. And for his doing so, he became a famous devotee of the Lord. For it is declared in all the scriptures that Arjuna attained spiritual perfection by devotional service to the Lord in friendship. The fighting was there, the friendship was there. Arjuna was there, and Krishna was there. But Arjuna became a different person by devotional service. Therefore, the prayers of Kunti also indicate the same categorical changes in activities. Srimati Kunti wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something which is non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, that is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted that perfection and prayed for it from the Lord. Her affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis is not out of the range of devotional service because the service of the Lord and the service of the devotees are identical. Sometimes service to the devotees is more valuable than service to the Lord. But here, the affection of Kunti Devi for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis was due to family relation. This tie of affection in terms of material relation is the relation of Maya, because the relations of the body or mind are due to the influence of the external energy. Relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. When Kunti Devi wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but the relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. This relation of the soul to the soul can be established by the via medium of the relation with the supersoul. Seeing in the darkness is not seeing, but seeing by the light or the sun means to see the sun and everything else which was unseen in the darkness. That is the way of devotional service. Repeating, to cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others because it's the symptom of life. And one more reference I want to give is from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, with the verse that starts, Atma Pamyena Sarvatra Samapashati Yorjuna. Atmam pamyena sarvatra. And in this verse, Krishna is describing the perfect yogi, which is also a description of the dhira. Text number 632. Page number 302. I'll say, please repeat. Atmau pamyena sarvatra samam pashyati yojuna sukham vadyadi vadukam sa yogi paramo mataha. Atma, with his self, au pamyena, by comparison, sarvatra, everywhere, samam, equally, pashyati, sees, Yaha, he who, Arjuna, O Arjuna, Sukham, happiness, Va, or, Yadi, if, Va, or, Dukham, distress, Sa, such, Yogi, a transcendentalist. Parama, perfect. Mataha is considered. Translation. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress. O Arjuna, please repeat. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and distress. O Arjuna. Purport. One who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God, and the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being. What's the cause of distress for the living beings? And what's the cause of happiness? Knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all activities, and the proprietor of all lands, and the sincerest friend of all living entities. The perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world. And he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. Nachatasman manusheshu kashchan me priyakritama. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities, and in this way he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man toward Krishna consciousness. From that, did we get any more clue about the balance between someone who's off the Bali concept of life, who's dealing with people in the world in a certain way? Did you? You want to say something about it?
In this verse, Lord Krishna is contrasting, Srila Prabhupada is contrasting between a pure devotee and a yogi. Like, yogi will go to a secluded place, he'll think about only his own benefit. Whereas a pure devotee, once he realizes Krishna consciousness, he'll try to distribute to others and he'll try his best to get others to Krishna consciousness.
Okay. My original point for discussion was a dhira, someone who's undisturbed by the happiness and distress of the material world. The question was, is a person in that position uncaring when somebody else suffers due to illusion? The illusion of, for instance, death, which is, you know, losing a loved one or something like that. It says in the Bhagavad Gita also that the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Does that mean that a dhira who is undisturbed doesn't show any kind of compassion for someone, even on a sentimental level? In other words, do they show them any care? Or do they just say, well, you know, you're not your body. Somebody just died, so it didn't really happen. Death didn't really happen because they're still alive. Srivas Pandit Prabhu?
Well, two examples come to mind. The best of the dhiras is the Supreme Lord himself, and there is nobody better. Or a dhira, he's the symbol of the perfect dhira. And then... Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu consoled his mother when his father had passed away. By empathizing and at the same time giving her spiritual knowledge, so that kind of pacified her heart.
So what was the example you gave about Lord Krishna?
Example of Lord Krishna was that when Ashwatthama had killed the five sons of Draupadi, and when they were lamenting in the 8th chapter, we read that he pacified them by quoting the scriptures. At the same time, he was very empathetic. He was not like...
So. Nice examples. So we're drawing a composite of the dhira, the person who is undisturbed, and it doesn't include... Now we're seeing, thanks to Srivas Pandit Prabhu, that such a person would be, on one side, fully realized and understand what's going on. As it says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that a wise person sees what's happening when someone leaves their body, whereas an ignorant person doesn't. But that doesn't mean that such a person doesn't show compassion and empathize with those who are in ignorance and who are suffering because of the loss of a loved one or some kind of trauma caused by interaction with the modes of material nature. Is that what you're saying? And that you're also giving evidence that Krishna himself, please move up to the front row, that Krishna himself showed such empathy and compassion. So Adhira, on one hand, sees what's going on and can administer spiritual knowledge to help the situation, whereas at the same time knows how to be materially compassionate. Right? Recently, about a year ago, a family that I knew had there was a death in the family. The son died, and they were in great shock, and the parents and the rest of the siblings. And they said that a lot of friends kept coming over to visit the house, and they were expressing their distress, so much so that the parents had to console them. And they were saying behind the scenes, they were saying that it wasn't actually a very good help, you know, to have people come over and weep and you know, show their pain, you know, so that they actually had to console them. And then also I heard a similar situation with a devotee family who had lost a son, and they were saying that when devotees would come over, they would show compassion, but at the same time they would speak Krishna Katha, which made them feel better. And there was a foundation on which they could actually take solace, you know, from hearing the Shastra and being around devotees. And I was contrasting those two, that when someone is ignorant and tries to show compassion, that it may have the opposite result because they're in ignorance and they don't know how to help somebody else. Whereas somebody who's dhira, who understands that we're not our body, that the soul never dies, but at the same time can also administer compassion. Because we're a mixture of matter and spirit. It's not that in the situation and the suffering of the material world that there's not pain. It's actually there. It's transitory and it's unnecessary, but there's pain nonetheless. Just like in a dream, when you think that the plane is going to crash, and you're dreaming and the plane's going down and you're looking and thinking, oh no, and then you start, Hare Krishna! You may wake up and you're perspiring and you're still clenched because you had an experience, a window of experience that something calamitous was about to happen. So you suffer. And it's an illusory kind of suffering. It's a temporary kind of suffering, but it's suffering nonetheless. So Adhira understands, Atmaupam Yena Sarvatra, he sees everyone else in relationship to how he or she has interacted with the world, and on one side has a spiritual foundation and understands what's going on spiritually, that actually no harm will come to the soul, but at the same time, he or she understands that there is suffering on the material platform. So there's a balance, and I'm bringing this out to point out that the Vaishnava is compassionate, is dhira, is undisturbed, but is also a complete person. It doesn't become an uncaring, impersonal character because he or she is self-realized, but actually becomes more compassionate to others, seeing their situation and understanding what they're going through, and knows how to administer to them. Srivas Prabhu?
In a very humorous way, and I just wanted to make the only point is that when Sri Krishna pacified Pandavas, he didn't kind of bring up and said, you know, just few hours ago or few days ago I spoke Gita, you know, we forgot everything and you're just lamenting for your sons. But he still was so compassionate, you know, in spite of all that knowledge he gave earlier.
Yeah. Nice. Yes, Rakshay Prabhu.
Thank you. Also, according to Krishna's own description of the attributes of someone who he says possesses transcendental qualities, like godly men endowed with divine nature, in the 16th chapter, where he lists these qualities of divine people in the first verse of that chapter. Many, many qualities are listed, and one of them is this daya bhuteshu, mercy towards all living beings, which in that translation comes across as compassion for all living beings, compassion for all living entities. And this is among one of the several transcendental qualities he tells Arjun that belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. So it is an attribute of these godly men. And then the other point about one is dhira is equipoised, not affected by happiness or distress, would be that person's own reaction to a certain situation. That is, a certain situation occurred which may be distressful. One is controlling one's emotions and is able to be steady in that situation. But at the same time, it doesn't say that his mercy towards somebody else who is undergoing a distressful situation will not outpour. It would outpour, but at the same time, this individual, if he or she encountered a distressful situation, would be steady to control their emotional reactions.
Thank you. Well put. So we're on the mantra 13, which is describing, first of all, how one becomes enlightened. And it is said in the very first paragraph that the system of hearing from undisturbed authorities is approved in this mantra. Unless one hears from a bona fide acharya who is never disturbed by the changes of the material world, one cannot have the real key to transcendental knowledge. The bona fide spiritual master who has also heard the Shruti mantras or Vedic knowledge from his undisturbed acharya never presents anything that is not mentioned in the Vedic literature. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.25, it is clearly said that those who worship the Pitris or forefathers attain the planets of the forefathers, that the gross materialists who make plans to remain here stay in this world, and that the devotees of the Lord who worship none but Lord Krishna, the supreme cause of all causes, reach him in his spiritual sky. Here also in the Sri Upanishad, it is verified that one achieves different results by different modes of worship. If we worship the Supreme Lord, we will certainly reach him in his eternal abode. And if we worship demigods like the sun god or moon god, we can reach their respective planets without a doubt. And if we wish to remain on this wretched planet with our planning commissions and our stopgap political adjustments, we can certainly do that also. Next paragraph. Nowhere in authentic scriptures is it said that one will ultimately reach the same goal by doing anything or worshiping anyone. Such foolish theories are offered by self-made spiritual masters who have no connection with the parampara, the bona fide system of disciplic succession. The bona fide spiritual master cannot say that all paths lead to the same goal, and that anyone can attain this goal by his own mode of worship of the demigods or of the supreme or whatever. Any common man can very easily understand that a person can reach his destination only when he has purchased a ticket for that destination. A person who has purchased a ticket for Calcutta can reach Calcutta but not Bombay. But the so-called spiritual masters say that any and all paths will take one to the supreme goal. Such mundane and compromising offers attract many foolish creatures who become puffed up with their manufactured methods of spiritual realization. The Vedic instructions, however, do not uphold them, unless one has received knowledge from the bona fide spiritual master, who is in the recognized line of disciplic succession. One cannot have the real thing as it is. Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita 4.2, Evam parampara apraptam imam raja shayo viduhu sakalaneha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But of course, the time the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. At Urban Edge Yoga on Monday night, which is in Toronto, we gave a presentation about mantra yoga and such, and someone asked, then, what is the difference between a mantra and a regular sound? I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can say, and then there's a mantra. How can you say that your mantra is a bona fide mantra, and that what I'm saying, what I've made up as my mantra, is not a bona fide mantra? What is your opinion? We can say anything, right? It doesn't make any difference. It's all sounds, isn't it?
Accept me as the President of the United States. Why not me?
Means?
That anybody can, unless there is an authorized way of formulating something which is coming down, that can be authorized. Otherwise, it can be just anything can be anything, and everything is okay.
Okay. You had a point?
Hello.
It's on.
Yeah, I think then the proof of the pudding is in the eating, so one can say any mantra. The only difference will be that if he says the mantra which is authorized in an authorized manner, if he follows the sadhana, he'll realize the results of that. And then
in the beginning, it may be hard to tell, though, because somebody might think they don't have a taste for the Hare Krishna mantra or any other mantra. And it appears sometimes that people who make up mantras, they go on chanting them for many years.
But
they have so
one,
many mantras. Yeah.
Then in the beginning, if we say that it's from an authorized scripture, then there can be a counter argument saying that, okay, you think that's an authorized scripture, but it might not be.
Well, is there such a thing as authorized, or is anything can be considered authorized? I mean, I think this is close to Srivas Pandit Prabhu's point. He was saying, well, why can't I just say I'm the President of the United States? And we should just accept it, right? Is there a difference between one thing that's authorized and another thing that's not authorized? And if so, how do you tell what's authorized, what's unauthorized? Yes?
We can show the Bhagavad Gita parampara starting from Krishna coming to Prabhupada saying that this mantra is coming from there so that we are following.
Okay. That argument is just like if you go to buy a diamond and you want to know where it came from. That's one way to figure out that the diamond is authorized, right? I mean, you can look at it yourself and you can observe the diamond and see that it doesn't have flaws, and that it's got a certain weight and color and everything like that. And you could also ask where it came from. There may be certification. And if it came from an authorized diamond mine and the papers there, the seals there, that says this came from South African diamond mine, which is well known, then you have a pretty good idea that it's authorized, right? Rolex watch. People buy a Rolex watch in Hong Kong. They can buy a fake Rolex, right? But there's a way you can actually take it to the Rolex company, which is right down the street, and they'll check it for you. They look at the serial number and they'll look it up and see if it's actually an authorized Rolex watch and check and see. So your point is you want to check the lineage and see where it came from. Yours was saying the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. So you're saying because there could be counter-arguments about what's authorized and what's not authorized, I have my own disciplic succession, etc., then you have to say, then you have to say...
agreeing to disagreeing kind of mentality, then one has to say, you try it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Rakshit?
The other would be... from whom is the information coming? Is it coming from a person who knows? Like one example that is often given, even in Srila Prabhupada's books, that if there is a question, who is father of the child, you can go and ask randomly individuals in society and you will get different answers. But all you need to do is ask the mother of the boy and she will say, who the father is. In this example, the mother is the authority. She knows. She has first-hand information. Along the same lines, if people are questioning about the existence of God or is there such a thing, then ask those who have studied the science of God and whom they have studied it from. They have studied it from authorized individuals who have been in knowledge associated with that information. So when it comes from them, such knowledgeable persons, it would have validation and authority.
So we're talking about axiomatic truth, and that's in any science, you must accept axiomatic truth, like a point has no width, no breadth, philosophically, right? And if you don't accept axiomatic truth in mathematics, then you get into infinite regress that you can question everything. And similarly, Rakshit Prabhu was bringing out the point that those who are following the Vedic culture accept the Vedic aphorisms as axiomatic. And that when they, you can research it and you can find out whether it's true or not, but you can save a lot of time by accepting as axiomatic truth what the Vedas say, and then based on that, it's like asking your mother who your father is. Otherwise, you can go ask everybody in the world, are you my father? And that might be, take a little more time and may not come up with the right answer. But the authority is the mother, so the Vedas are considered the mother. And Adhira is someone who, as we heard in the first paragraph, bases everything he or she says on that authority, on that axiomatic authority of the Vedas, proceeds from that position. We find it in many different contexts that, for instance, in a court of law, there's an accepted method of presenting evidence, and it has to be authorized, and it has to be according to protocol. There has to be precedent, and there also has to be case law. You have to say where it comes from and also show that it's been proved before in a certain way. And there's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra also when we discuss in spiritual circles that there's the case law in the Shastra, and there's precedent also by how sadhus have done it for many years and have accepted certain things in the line of disciplic succession. In the one of the last chapters of the Krishna book, there's a chapter called Prayers Personified Vedas. And this has also something to do with a question of mantra and how a mantra works. And in that chapter, there's a discussion about whether God is personal or impersonal. And at the outset, Srila Prabhupada brings out the point that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, obviously, is a person. He's the source of everything, and that the mantras, the efficacy of the mantra has to do with the fact that he is a person. And all the mantras actually are ultimately going back to him, or they're referring to him. And so he can enlighten one from within the heart. In other words, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantaksto Hibhadrani Vidunoti Suhritsatam. It's important that Krishna is the Suhrit, or he's the friend within the heart, and that he recognizes what the intention of the person is who is chanting the mantra. There are cases when somebody's chanting a mantra and they don't even pronounce it properly. Does it mean they don't get the result? Well, it depends if the person's sincere. And the reason it depends if they're sincere is because Krishna is a person and he recognizes what their intention is, and what their attempt is to chant the mantra. And he helps from within the heart to enlightened soul who is endeavoring in spiritual life. We're reading from this book called Sri Shapanishad. We're on page 93. And the next paragraph says, when Lord Sri Krishna was present on this earth, the bhakti yoga principle defined in the Bhagavad Gita had become distorted. Therefore, the Lord had to reestablish the disciplic succession beginning with Arjuna, who was the most confidential friend and devotee of the Lord. The Lord clearly told Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita 4.3, that it was because Arjuna was his devotee and friend that he could understand the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, only the Lord's devotee and friend can understand the Gita. This also means that one who follows the path of Arjuna can understand Bhagavad Gita. That's along the same lines as I was just mentioning, because it's a personal process and Krishna is there assisting. If one is sincere and not envious, then Krishna reveals the science from within the heart. At the present moment, there are many interpreters and translators of this sublime knowledge, of this sublime dialogue, who care nothing for Lord Krishna or Arjuna. Such interpreters explain the verses of the Bhagavad Gita in their own way and postulate all sorts of rubbish in the name of the Gita. Such interpreters believe neither in Sri Krishna nor his eternal abode. How then can they explain the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna clearly says that only those who have lost their sense worship demigods for paltry rewards. Ultimately, he advises that one give up all other ways and modes of worship and fully surrender unto him alone. Only those who are cleansed of all sinful reactions can have such unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord. Others will continue hovering on the material platform with their paltry ways of worship, and thus will be misled from the real path under the false impression that all paths lead to the same goal. In this mantra of Sri Shapanishad, the word sambhavat, by worship of the Supreme Cause, is very significant. Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and everything that exists has emanated from him. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya prababho matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. What did you hear so far in that last section?
So we heard about demigod worship, that people worship demigods for their own material gain.
And that's okay, right?
No.
Why not?
It is not, because everything that we do, we talked about a little bit earlier, is that Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything, and he's also the supreme enjoyer. And when we pray to demigod, we are actually asking things for ourselves. There's a material gain, there's something for ourselves. And it's not completely dedicated to Krishna.
Okay.
A pure devotee does everything for Krishna.
Thank you. What else did you hear? Go ahead.
Yeah, he also quoted the first shloka of the Chaturshloki Gita, where it talks about that everything emanates from Krishna, sarvasya prabhava matha sarvabhava, and knowing that, then people worship him, knowing that he's the supreme and he's the originator of everything. It also mentioned 1866, where it says, you know, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto him. Because this verse of Isha Upanishad is basically talking about that one, you get one set of results by worshipping which is not supreme, and another set of results which you get by worshipping the supreme. And so in that support, you know, in the purport, Prabhupada is also talking about that Krishna also says that abandon everything and just worship me, and not others like demigods. And
okay. Anything else? Any questions so far? Okay, next section, page 95. Here is a correct description of the Supreme Lord given by the Lord himself. The words sarvasya prabhava indicate that Krishna is the creator of everyone, including Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And because these three principal deities of the material world are created by the Lord is the creator of all that exists in the material and spiritual worlds. In the Atharva Veda, Gopal Tapani Upanishad 124, it is similarly said, he who existed before the creation of Brahma and who enlightened Brahma with Vedic knowledge is Lord Sri Krishna. Similarly, in the Narayana Upanishad 1, it states that then the Supreme Person, Narayan, desired to create all living beings. Thus, from Narayan, Brahma was born. Narayan created all the Prajapatis. Narayan created Indra. Narayan created the 8 Vasus. Narayan created the 11 Rudras. Narayan created the 12 Adityas. Since Narayan is a plenary manifestation of Lord Krishna, Narayan and Krishna are one and the same. The Narayana Upanishad 4 states Devaki's son Krishna is the Supreme Lord. The identity of Narayan with the Supreme Cause has also been accepted and confirmed by Sripad Shankaracharya, even though Shankar does not belong to the Vaishnava or personalist cult. The Atharva Veda, Maha Upanishad, also states, only Narayan existed in the beginning, when neither Brahma, nor Shiva, nor fire, nor water, nor stars, nor sun, nor moon existed. The Lord does not remain alone, but creates as he desires. Krishna himself states in the Moksha Dharma, I created the Prajapatis and the Rudras. They do not have complete knowledge of me because they are covered by my illusory energy. It is also stated in the Varaha Purana, Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and from him the four-headed Brahma was manifested, as well as Rudra, who later became omniscient. Thus, all Vedic literature confirms that Narayan or Krishna is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita 5.1, it is also said that the Supreme Lord is Sri Krishna, Govinda, the delighter of every living being and the primeval cause of all causes. The really learned persons know this from evidence given by the great sages and the Vedas, and thus they decide to worship Lord Krishna as all in all. Such persons are called Buddha, or really learned, because they worship only Krishna. The conviction that Krishna is all in all is established when one hears the transcendental message from the undisturbed Acharya with faith and love. One who has no faith in or love for Krishna cannot be convinced of this supreme truth, of the simple truth. Those who are faithless are described in the Bhagavad Gita 9.11 as mudhas, fools or asses. It is stated that the mudhas deride the personality of Godhead because they do not have complete knowledge from the undisturbed Acharya. One who is disturbed by the whirlpool of material energy is not qualified to become an Acharya. Before hearing the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was disturbed by the material whirlpool, by his affection for his family, society, and community. Thus, Arjuna wanted to become a philanthropic, nonviolent man of the world. But when he became Buddha, by hearing the Vedic knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita from the Supreme Person, he changed his decision and became a worshipper of Lord Sri Krishna, who had himself arranged the battle of Kurukshetra. Arjuna worshipped the Lord by fighting with his so-called relatives, and in this way he became a pure devotee of the Lord. Such accomplishments are possible only when one worships the real Krishna and not some fabricated Krishna invented by foolish men who are without knowledge of the intricacies of the science of Krishna described in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. According to the Vedanta Sutra, Sambhuta is the source of birth and sustenance as well as the reservoir that remains after annihilation. Janmadya Sayataha. The Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the same author, maintains that the source of all emanations is not like a dead stone, but is abhijna, or fully conscious. The primeval Lord Sri Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita 7:26 that he is fully conscious of past, present, and future, and that no one, including demigods such as Shiva and Brahma, know him fully. Certainly, half-educated spiritual leaders who are disturbed by the tides of material existence cannot know him fully. They try to make some compromise by making the mass of humanity the object of worship, but they do not know that such worship is only a myth because the masses are imperfect. The attempt by these so-called spiritual leaders is something like pouring water on the leaves of a tree instead of the root. The natural process is to pour water on the root, but such disturbed leaders are more attracted to the leaves than the root. Despite their perpetually watering the leaves, however, everything dries up for want of nourishment. Sri Upanishad advises us to pour water on the root, the source of all germination. Worship of the mass of humanity by rendering bodily service, which can never be perfect, is less important than service to the soul. The soul is the root that generates different types of bodies according to the law of karma. To serve human beings by medical aid, social help, and educational facilities, while at the same time cutting the throats of poor animals in slaughterhouses, is no service at all to the soul, the living being. The living being is perpetually suffering in different types of bodies from the material miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. The human form of life offers one a chance to get out of this entanglement simply by reestablishing the lost relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. The Lord comes personally to teach this philosophy of surrender unto the Supreme. The Sambhuta. Real service to humanity is rendered when one teaches surrender to and worship of the Supreme Lord with full love and energy. That is the instruction of Sri Upanishad in this mantra. The simple way to worship the Supreme Lord in this age of disturbance is to hear and chant about his great activities. The mental speculators, however, think that the activities of the Lord are imaginary. Therefore, they refrain from hearing of them and invent some word jugglery without any substance to divert the attention of the innocent masses of people. Instead of hearing of the activities of Lord Krishna, such pseudo-spiritual masters advertise themselves by inducing their followers to sing about them. In modern times, the number of such pretenders has increased considerably, and it's become a problem for the pure devotees of the Lord to save the masses of people from the unholy propaganda of these pretenders and pseudo-incarnations. The Upanishads indirectly draw our attention to the primeval Lord Sri Krishna, but the Bhagavad Gita, which is the summary of all the Upanishads, directly points to Sri Krishna. Therefore, one should hear about Krishna as he is by hearing from the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, one's mind will gradually be cleansed of all contaminated things. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17 says, "By hearing of the activities of the Lord, the devotee draws the attention of the Lord. Thus the Lord, being situated in the heart of every living being, helps the devotee by giving him proper directions." The Bhagavad Gita 10.10 confirms this. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. The Lord's inner direction cleanses the devotee's heart of all contamination produced by the material modes of passion and ignorance. Non-devotees are under the sway of passion and ignorance. One who is in passion cannot become detached from material hankering, and one who is in ignorance cannot know what he is or what the Lord is. Thus, when one is in passion or ignorance, there is no chance for self-realization, however much one may play the part of a religionist. For a devotee, the modes of passion and ignorance are removed by the grace of the Lord. In this way, the devotee becomes situated in the quality of goodness, the sign of a perfect Brahman. Anyone can qualify as a Brahman if he follows the path of devotional service under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18 also says, Kirata hunandra pulinda pulkasha abhira shumba yavana kasaraya yene cha papa yarapashraya shraya shudyanti tasmai pravavishnave nama. Any low-born person can be purified by the guidance of a pure devotee of the Lord, for the Lord is extraordinarily powerful. When one attains brahminical qualifications, he becomes happy and enthusiastic to render devotional service to the Lord. Automatically, the science of God is unveiled before him. By knowing the science of God, one gradually becomes freed from material attachments, and one's doubtful mind becomes crystal clear by the grace of the Lord. One who attains this stage is a liberated soul and can see the Lord in every step of life. This is the perfection of Sambhava, as described in this mantra of Sri Ishapanishad. So the mantra says, Anyadevahur sambhavad anyarahur sambhavad iti shushumatiranam yenas tadvichachshire. That there is a definite authorized process for understanding oneself and understanding the Supreme, and that if one follows the process by hearing from an undisturbed authority, who's also followed the process and heard from an undisturbed authority, then one will come to the perfect stage. Otherwise, there are innumerable ways to follow a process that's not connected to the authorized process. And when one follows that, one can get any number of results which won't be spiritual. What do you think? You like the mantra? What do you like about it? Gandharvika likes the mantra and she wants to tell us why.
I really wanted to tell this, Prabhuji, because on page 95, Krishna says, "As the wise, everything emanates from me, the wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts." So I was, while preparing for Bhakti Shastri exam, I was also attracted to this verse where Krishna says that it's not that you understand and then you just give lecture. Everything transfers into an action, and there is something that's happening in your heart, which is a big thing, because nobody can change anybody's heart, and people ask for like so many magics that other people do and they go after them. But the magic that happens is like one can perceive, like by practicing devotional service, like we change and we can really see Krishna and worship him with all our hearts. So that's really something, you know, worshipping Krishna with all our hearts is a topmost goal. And Krishna says that if we understand, and that is what means that we understood that everything comes from Krishna. So
this is a nice point, and you also made the point too about does the process work or not. And there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam that says, that compares the process of devotional service to that of eating a meal. And that is, when you're hungry and you eat a meal, you feel satisfied, nourished, and your hunger goes away. And in the similar way, when you're actually surrendering to Krishna, there's a change. You feel it systemically. It's a visceral feeling. And you feel that you're becoming reconnected with Krishna. You see Krishna for yourself. And the external symptom is, it's also internal, but externally others can see how you're becoming detached from other things that aren't related to Krishna. More importantly, how you see it for yourself. Can everyone please move up about 6 or 7 inches? This chapter in the second canto of the Bhagavatam is called Devotional Service, the change in heart. And Srila Prabhupada mentions this at the end of this purport, that there's a change of heart that takes place by worshiping Krishna. Nice point. Thank you very much. What else? Ramananda Sakha Prabhu.
It was mentioned in the purport that a devotee cannot be in the mode of passion and ignorance. But I see that devotees can also be in the mode of ignorance. I'm just talking about myself. Or we can say that if someone is in the mode of ignorance, then he's not a devotee. I mean, we can also infer like that. But how can ignorance be conquered from that devotion? If one is a devotee, how can he go over the ignorance?
By continuing the process of devotional service. Mam cha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitai tan brahmapuyaya kalpate. When one constantly engages in devotional service without falling down, then one will rise above the modes of material nature and come to the level of Brahman. Also, how one can be affected by the external body and the modes and at the same time be a pure devotee is described by Krishna himself in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when he says, Abhichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhureva samantavya samyag vyavasito hisaha. That's, and the sense of this verse is that our material and spiritual life go on in parallel lines because we're a mixture of matter and spirit. And we've been in contact with matter for a long time. One who takes to the process of pure devotional service, worshipping Sambhavat, and at the same time has a material body, has the challenge of balancing the two things. And that is the relationship with the material world and responsibilities to the material side of life, the body, the mind, the intellect, and the purely spiritual part of life. And they're going as in a balance. And sometimes, especially in the beginning, before one has attained at least the stage of nishta or complete steadiness, there's a chance that the material side of life will overwhelm the spiritual side of life. And there can be an occasional appearance of worldliness, even in a pure devotee. And therefore, Krishna says, even if, api chet, sudaracharo. Duracharo means some kind of really bad habit. And sudaracharo means like really, really bad. Api chet, so Krishna is saying, even if somebody shows some kind of really bad habit, sudaracharo, bhajate ma mananya bhak, if they're engaged in worshiping me, that person is considered a sadhu because he's rightly situated on the path. Because, next verse, Sri Prambhavati dharmatma shashvat shantim nagachati konteya pratijanihi nami bhakti pranashati. He says, quickly such a person will rise above the modes, they'll become completely purified. Many places, Krishna uses the word ashu, or in the shastras, ashu. Vasudevi, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Prayojita, Janayat Yashu, Vairagyam, Jnanam, Chayara, Haitukam. If you're performing devotional service, ashu means very quickly you'll get jnana and vairagya. You'll get detachment and knowledge and all the things that touch Tradhana Munayo, Jnana Vairagya, Yuktaya, Pashyantyatmani, Chatmanam, Bhaktya, Shuta, Grihitaya, that will fortify you so that you won't fall down again into the material world. But in the beginning, of course, just like a child learning to walk, there are going to be some unsteadiness, some standing up and falling down. But one who continues on the path will come to the perfect stage and will step by step, anukramena, graduate from unsteady devotional service to steady devotional service. And from that platform, one can attain a taste and then attachment and then come to bhava, where the heart actually melts, and then beyond that, one begins to realize one's relationship with Krishna, and life changes dramatically. And this is a stage of maturing. It's hard for a child to actually conceptualize what it's like to be an adult. You know, they could play with like a easy bake oven and have some kind of, you know, they have some kind of an idea of what it's like. But when they actually grow up and they, you know, they do adult things, then they know for themselves. So in the same way in devotional service, we have to continue with the process and we'll mature to that stage. Okay? All right. What else? Yes. Shri Krishna Purushottam Prabhu.
In page number 94, at the second paragraph, is which strikes me, there are like so many like misinterpretation of Bhagavad Gita, like Dr. Rajgopal Acharya. There are so many other Bhagavad Gita available, but which is coming from Parampara, which is we are reading daily. So, means how to explain to the other, like new people, Prabhu, like like they don't know about Vaishnava, four Vaishnava philosophies, and like how do you say this is the book we are is coming from past 5,000 years?
Just tell them this is a book coming from past 5,000 years, coming through parampara. And by connection to that process, it's like if you connect to an electrical source, the light comes on and you experience it for yourself. So there is a way in which, I mean, generally people don't, philosophically, they don't become convinced as much as they do from the heart when they have association with those who are advanced in devotional service. There is a there's a change of heart, and when they actually are in the environment, there's a there's an overall change, and then the acceptance comes later. I've seen this many times with people who have ideas about particular philosophies, and it doesn't get solved on the platform of philosophical argument. As we can see, oftentimes people go on and on with arguments. Tarko pratishtanat. It's like there's no actual conclusion through Tarko. So therefore, Shastra says, don't be a Tarki and just argue about things. But therefore, when you perform the process and introduce the process to people, particularly chanting is transformative when the right environment is created and people can come together and chant and take prasadam and then hear some philosophy, then there's a change of heart. One becomes attached to devotees and attached to the environment and begins to feel a change in heart.
Why ask this question, Prabhu? Like, I was in door-to-door a couple of weeks before. One guy asked me, I'm reading Ashtavakra Gita, and I told him, this is a straight Gita, you can read it. It's coming from past 5,000 years, and yeah, finally he took the Bhagavad Gita from us. So.
So he took your Bhagavad Gita?
Yes, yes.
Nice.
So another thing, I think experts can speak, but I just thought usually what I do is I just say that there are different versions of Bhagavad Gita, but this is the one you can determine the success of a version based on the output, like how Prabhupada says, like I have been practicing this for so many years and this is something you can put into practice, it's not theory. So like that we can exemplify this version, that how it is like, it explains like how it can be practiced in today's life. So it will, even if you read the other things, but this will strengthen your faith or something like that. So that then people, a couple of people took that. So that's one.
When you basically you're telling what's in it for them. That
yes.
If you read it, then you'll.
No, because if they say that they read many versions of Bhagavad Gitas, but we say that this has really turned people. People have read Bhagavad Gita, same point that Prabhupada says, but this has produced like millions of copies sold, and so many people have turned into devotees, mm-hmm. and all that. Then people like that it is really something that they can practice in their lives.
Same point Prabhupada makes in the introduction of the Gita, that there have been many versions, but. When this version came, then many people became devotees. Yeah. Nice. Sukeshwari.
I was just thinking about the point Ramananda Sekhar Prabhu was mentioning about the ignorance thing. I was just thinking that, you know, since we had our exam on Sunday, for the past 3 to 4 days, was the only time that I really was trying to read Bhagavad Gita very attentively. Unfortunately. So I was just thinking that when you attentively try to listen to what Krishna is telling, all those days, you're really out of ignorance. Like in 365 days, we were just having a discussion in the morning, 365 days, maybe for 5 days, if I even do that for a year, I think it'll be successful, you know. But I mean, I'm hoping we'll have more exam-oriented things because I'm so academic-based. I'm just thinking that just, otherwise I would just read Bhagavad Gita, but not as attentively. Now, like, I have less time and I need to get all these chapters done, everything in my mind now.
mm-hmm.
So I was just thinking that just reading Prabhupada's books attentively, it helps a lot.
Yeah, at certain times you'll have more intensity than at others. And then, of course, if you remember that there's a final exam coming at any second, then you may be more attentive also. I mean,
it really makes a difference.
It does.
I'm really busy at work, and by 5 minutes I get,
I just go and study Bhagavad Gita, I feel so much confident about myself. And in the past 1 year, it has really helped me. I should thank
because
you.
Because of the test. Let's thank Hari Bol.
Thank you,
Srivas. Look at Parikshit Maharaj. He was very attentive. He knew he had 7 days.
Yeah, I was just remembering the quote that I heard when I took the 6-week Bhagavad Gita course, like in 98. He then mentioned that, you know, like life is a preparation and death is an examination. So, but then, you know, you don't know when that exam is coming. So, you know, I have to keep telling myself I have to be attentive all the time. It's not just for a material exam.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a spiritual exam, but you know, this is more to do with I should be able to get good marks or pass through, you know. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, Rakshan.
Also wanted to come back to this point about the mode of ignorance, and you pointed out that it is engaging in devotional service that allows one to transcend the modes. And you had also cited this other verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was the Srinvata Swakatha Krishna. And after that, the four verses that follow throw some light on how devotional service can take away the mode of ignorance. Among them, one is the Tadar Rajastamo Bhava, in which Krishna is saying that as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. So there is something with the process of devotional service that it is melting away or burning away those other modes, that is ignorance and passion. And then in the subsequent verse that follows after that, this is the Evam Prasanna Manaso verse, where the translation is, he says that, thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. So, engaging in devotional service is then taking one into the mode of goodness. The person was previously in the mode of passion and ignorance, and now, having engaged in this, he has become so enlivened that he has been placed in this mode of unalloyed goodness that it would appear that when devotional service is there, the other thing, that is ignorance, cannot coexist. It's like there was ignorance before, but as soon as devotional service stepped in, it just melts it away. It drives it away because one becomes enlivened by contact with it.
Well, we went over this, the good points and nice citations, and this describes the process. Prabhupada summarized it at the end of this purport. There is a case that we discussed from the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, that there is devotional service performed in goodness, passion, ignorance, and in transcendence. So there are gradations. In other words, one may be affected by be performing devotional service, but still be affected by the mode of ignorance or passion or goodness. However, when one comes to the perfect stage, as being described here, in unalloyed devotional service, there's no more tinge of any of the modes of material nature. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karman yanavritam anukulyena krishna nushilanam bhaktir uttama. So, you know, the perfection of devotional service is when those qualities no longer affect one. Important, though, is to understand that it's a process. And by hearing and chanting and the association of devotees as recommended, mostly recommended, then gradually, you said that the modes melt away, and it's a nice description, and it's also given in that section by Kapiladeva where he says that it's like digestion. When you eat food and it gets digested and distributed to the rest of the body, you don't exactly know how it's happening. It just happens. And similarly, he says that the subtle body, that means especially the material subtle body, which perpetuates our stay in the material world, becomes dissolved the way by devotional service, the way food is digested in the stomach. Lord Kapiladeva says this. So there's a natural way by which, as we continue in the process, especially hearing and chanting, then the effect is there. And we can increase our capacity to hear and chant, not just, I mean, having exams, this is an important thing. And as we become more, mature in devotional service, as I gave the formula the other night from the Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says that KK equals KC. And that is your desire for hearing and chanting is directly equal to your advancement in Krishna consciousness, devotional service. So as we increase our level of Krishna consciousness, our desire to hear increases also, natural desire to hear. There's a ruchi. And that also is mentioned in the second chapter of the first canto, Shushru Shro Shradhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahat Sevya Viprapunya Tirtana Shavana, that as you do service to great souls, that your desire, your taste increases to hear. But it's the perfection of life to develop this taste, to want to hear more and more. And we can tell directly how much we're making advancement in devotional service by our desire to hear. We should feel uncomfortable if we're not in a position to hear, or that, we become separated from the hearing process. So today we heard specifically the verse 13 from the Shriya Upanishad about how there's a difference between worshipping the supreme cause of all causes and that which is not supreme. And it's a source of great enlivenment because once we connect to the direct process of worshipping Krishna, then the result is sure and certain. And one simply has to remain connected to that process, and the result will be there. And one will also, by hearing from the dhira, or the undisturbed acharya, one should also become dhira oneself. Just looking at some of the verses and the purports of the nectar of instruction, and the different levels of devotees are mentioned in that verse number 5, the neophyte and the middle devotee and the most advanced devotee. And particularly important there is that Prabhupada quotes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that even if one starts as a neophyte, if he or she continues the process, krame krame teho, that person gradually, step by step, will come to the stage of uttam, will become an uttam adhikari. So it's only a matter of step by step. One simply has to take the process. And because sambhavat, Krishna is there, he will give us all assistance from within the heart. Om Tat Sat. Sri Upanishad ki jai, Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Bhakti Shastri ki jai, Gaur Premanande Haribo. Did everyone take the exam? Was it all right?
Few of them, most of them skipped that. I think, I don't know statistics, but few of my friends.
Yeah, I mean, about 17 devotees
took. 17 devotees took the exam? Did you take it, Dominar?
Yes, Prabhu.
Good for you. And everyone else to take it later or something? I see. Well, congratulations to everyone who took the exam. I see. Oh, the devotees in Japan? Oh, yeah, of course. The earthquake. That's definitely get you out of an exam for sure. Well,
I'm more sympathetic to
Oh yeah. You have to write another exam. In Toronto, on Saturday, the devotees rented a school bus. We could fit about 50 of us in the school bus, and the other 50 devotees that came along drove by car. But we drove from Toronto to Niagara Falls, which is about an hour and a half drive. Has anybody here been to Niagara Falls before? You have. It's nice, huh? Anyway, we drove out there and had a kirtan with about 100 devotees and some book distribution. And it was very nice to be together in a bus. I was thinking we should get a bus here, too. This weekend you're getting a bus? Oh. It was a school bus. Just rented the school bus.
No, we're looking for 108 kids. That's why I thought there was a vacancy.
Oh, I see. So now we'll have kirtan, and let's put away all the books and asans, and we can stand up and sing kirtan. Go premanande Haribol.